Hey, thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're looking for help in scaling your e-commerce business or dropshipping business, then just go to ecommercescalingsecrets.com and fill out the form, and we'll see exactly how we can help you to take your business to the next level. Thank you. Hello guys, Alex Feratov here, and today we have an amazing guest, one of our students in e-commerce scaling secrets program, Michael Clarity. He's an amazing guy and he runs e-commerce brand. He actually evolved from dropshipping to e-commerce brand, and he does $36,000 a day. I'm very excited for this, you know, especially for people who already do some numbers, do some good numbers with dropshipping model, want to transition to brand and build something sustainable, something sellable. Then, you know, Michael is has experience with this and will share with this experience with us. So very happy to have you here, man.
And thanks, man. I'm super pleasure to be on the show. Really, really cool. Thanks for having me.
And Michael has an amazing t-shirt, which I like.
Thanks, man.
Cool, man. So, so tell me, like, so when did you start with like e-commerce in the first place? How long have you been doing this?
So overall e-commerce, I got started back in the end of 2017. So a bit over 3 years, like 3.5 years ago now, was actually, 17 back then. So I was really young.
You're so young.
Yeah, man.
I'm like a fucking dinosaur. Like I'm 30.
It's crazy, man. It's crazy. The e-com space, I mean, really anyone can get in, you know, it doesn't matter how old you are, like where you come from. That's the awesome thing. But yeah, I actually just turned 21 yesterday. So I'm having... Thanks, man. And so got started three and a half years ago.
Started really like dropshipping model? Like what model?
I actually got started with, I got started with Amazon FBA like 4 years ago. And before that, I was like, my first business I started with 15. I was like doing music videos. Then I took all the money I made from my music videos and put them into like an Amazon FBA product that failed pretty miserably. I mean, I was getting sales, but I actually bought a product that was patented and I had to remove it from Amazon. And I still have the stock to this day. It's at like my parents' house. So I pretty much lost all my money doing that, all the money I made before. And then I was like, fuck, okay, I still want to be... I'm sorry, I don't want to curse here. And I was like, okay, I still want to be an e-com, but now I don't have any more money. So I need something where I can also get started with like a low startup budget. So I found out about dropshipping. I'm going to start with that. Also was failing for like the first 3 months, 4 months, then found my first winning product, kind of took off, nothing crazy compared to the numbers right now. But it just proved the model to me. And then, yeah, I just kept doing it. I kept, you know, testing new products, finding new winners. Yeah.
And you started the German market or what market you started with?
I'm actually selling to the US market because I know there are some people who also sell in the EU without paying VAT. Like there are ways to do it, but the German tax system, man, it's so strict. It's crazy. Like if I were to sell to Europe from Germany, like they would make me charge VAT. It just doesn't make sense. So from the beginning, I was like, okay, if I sell in the US, then I don't have that. So I still only focus on like the American, Canadian, Australian markets, so like the big four pretty much.
I mean, it's very competitive markets, right? But if you can sell something in this market, like then I think you're a good marketer.
Thanks, man.
That's awesome. And so then like what happened? So you started testing, like, how did you scale it to some numbers? Like how did it go from there?
So like my first big winner was in Q4 of 2019. Mm-hmm. And I tested the product as I always did, but like I could tell that product had like more potential. Obviously at that point I was already doing it for like 2 years. Like I was already, like I already learned all the marketing aspect. I learned Facebook ads, pretty much everything you need to know. So I had the knowledge to really scale the store as well. And then I scaled it to about $500,000 in revenue during Q4 of 2019. And at the same time, I was actually also thinking about starting like some brand, but I didn't really know what. Like I wanted to, you know, get a bit more away from the dropshipping model and start something like really something that's really sustainable long-term and something that I can potentially exit. And then it, It was pretty much just like really clear to me that the product just has like huge branding potential. And I was like, okay, why am I not just taking this product and turning it into a brand? And then it all started from there.
Okay, so what were the major adjustments that you have made to turn like a dropshipping product that you have validated? Because I think a lot of people watching like this video right now, why would someone watch my video? I mean, it's, you know, they probably dropship. I mean, they probably have some results, you know. It's like, I think that's, you know, that's those people are there watching. So if they have that, right, like that initial foundation, initial validation, what are the steps that you have done from your side to make it happen and turn it into a brand?
Mm-hmm. Great question, man. Great question. So the number one thing, the most important thing, in my opinion, is packaging. Mm-hmm. Like even before the product quality, what comes is the quality of your packaging when it comes to having a good brand. Because when people receive the product, they are already pre-framed by the packaging. And obviously, if they receive something that comes in like a little letter with Chinese writing on it and just looks like sketchy, you know, then obviously people are going to go like open that and already go into the product with a really bad expectation. Whereas on the other side, if you have a nice packaging, which might add like a little bit to your cost of goods, you know, it might add like a dollar or two to your cost of goods. But if you have a cool unboxing experience, people are already going to be pre-framed that, okay, if the packaging is so nice, the product must also be nice. And even if the product still has the same quality as before, people are going to think and perceive it as better quality just because they're already pre-framed by this beautiful packaging that you have. And also on the flip side, what we also started doing, so that was kind of our first step, you know, getting a custom packaging made, just making the unboxing experience really nice. And what we also did is we used like videos and content of that packaging in our marketing as well. And then instead of just having like one of these like random dropshipping Facebook ads, we had one where you can see the product, you know, with our logo and everything printed on the packaging. And that way it's already like, it looks way more legit to people. And what we actually did is we increased our price by 20%, but we still kept the same conversion rate. Like the conversion rate still stayed the same because it just looked so much more legit and more premium.
Oh, really? So that changed, like you changed the price, but increase the price by 20%, but like your conversion didn't drop.
Yes, yes. And actually at this point, I do that even with all of my dropshipping products. If I don't like turn them into a brand, like I still have other stores where I'm just dropshipping. But even for those, I always make sure to get a custom packaging made together with my agent. And that way we're like able to really place ourselves and differentiate ourselves from all the other dropshippers and just make us look way more legit and place us more in like the premium category rather than, you know, competing against other more like affordable dropshippers.
That's such a good point, right? I mean, and just so simple, right? But
it's really simple.
Because like even on Amazon, like whatever category you have, like you probably have like many of these like mass market products, and then they're like the products pretty much like it's the same, but it's like, you know, better packaging, maybe slightly different look, and then it's like more expensive, more premium. And it's always best to be in premium segment, you know, I think, because
100%.
Your margins are higher. So your product, right? Because your situation is interesting. You sell the product that is like manufactured in Bali, or your team is in Bali?
Okay, so our team, our headquarters is in Bali. We have 8 staff members there. My business partner, he also like lives in Bali, and he's like the one.
And you have like a villa, and then you do like huge parties. Yeah. And stuff, right? Like that's what I think of Bali, right? Like it's like that kind of like people.
Bali's chill, man. Bali's super. It's a beautiful place. It's a beautiful place, man. I'm here in Germany, which I mean, I also like. I do go to Bali, you know, once in a while when there's like no COVID restrictions, obviously. But yeah. Anyways, to sort of get back to it. So the product, when we were dropshipping it, was manufactured in China. And we also took the first steps with the packaging while we were still shipping from China. And then what we did, together with my partner, we actually found a local supplier in Bali that was manufacturing a product in like way better quality than what we had from China. But it wasn't even much more expensive. Like our cost of goods went up, like I think 20%, not even 20%. But the quality difference, man, that was like a different planet. It was insane. Wow. It was still bad compared, or not bad, but it wasn't as good as our quality is today. Because we again have even different suppliers now that are even better, but back then it was like a huge jump already in terms of quality. And once we found that, it also just made sense to kind of open our headquarters in Bali. And then we also, you know, started buying our own inventory. And
I'm interrupting people all the time, sorry man. Like, so how that increase in quality correlated with like your metrics? Like, did it like your feedback score, for example, and like some other metrics, like did that correlate in any way? Like, did you get some benefits from that increase in quality or no initially?
The jump in our feedback score was pretty insane. I mean, what we did actually is we still had, when we started the brand, we still had the drop shipping store, and then we opened a new store where we then were only, you know, shipping out the branded product. Because in the beginning, like, this is the product we are selling is like really it's a very giftable product, so it's very seasonal, you know, it always peaks around Q4. And during, you know, the other time of the year, the sales aren't crazy, but in Q4, it goes pretty nuts. So at that point, when I started branding, it was already like a little bit too late for that Q4 to really get in. So all we could order were like only 700 units. And that was it. That was like our initial order, because our supplier wasn't able to make more. We were like, literally, we need this within a week or it's going to be too late. How many can you make us in a week? And the supplier was like, yeah, I can only make 700 and that's it. So we were like, fuck. So what we did is, you know, we still kept the dropshipping store running with our custom packaging though. And even just having the custom packaging improved our customer feedback score from like a 2.7 to almost a 4, just changing the packaging. Like, literally the product was the same quality. And then on our second store, where we started with the better quality that was manufactured in Bali, there our feedback score right out of the gate was almost at a 5. I think we started with like a 4.7 or something. It was crazy. It was really good. That went back down a bit again later on to like a 4, like a somewhere around 4. It's always like fluctuating around there. But we, at this point, we usually never drop under 4. Like, we're always around 4 and 5.
Wow. Very nice. So initially it was dropshipping, you have validated, and then you started working on this kind of like improvements of quality and stuff. Like, what made you like, so have you had to make like any like substantial investments? Like when you, for example, started producing these items like in Bali, like have you had to buy like a lot of inventory up front? Like, or you just like drop ship from that manufacturer now? Like, how did it go?
So again, our first order was only like 700 pieces. So that wasn't like a big investment. That was honestly, it was a good way to get started. I mean, obviously it was upfront cost. Like, we had to buy the inventory, but since we already made at that point, like 100K in profit from almost 100K in profit from the drop shipping store of that product, I mean, we had the money to invest, and it was honestly, it was a no-brainer to just reinvest that into our own stock. And yeah, that's what we did.
Cool. So how many products right now are you selling? Like, is that like one product that you're mostly pushing, or there's like a series of products?
So here's how it worked. So actually in the beginning of 2020, we put another order in for like 3,000 units of that product. And then what happened, since it's a really seasonal product, our ads actually weren't that profitable anymore. So we were already like, okay, what are we going to do now? You know, we have all this inventory and our ads are just like breaking even, and that's it.
I think that's one of the like main fears of people that transition from dropshipping to branding, because they say like, I'll buy like a bunch of inventory, And then like my ad account gets shut down, my page feedback score drops, or product will not sell, or my ads stop performing, right? And then I have a bunch of inventory that, you know, doesn't sell, right?
Yes, that's I think that's definitely the biggest fear for people, especially for dropshippers switching to private labeling or to an e-com brand. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, there is always a solution. And for us, you know, what we did is our ads weren't profitable on the front end, but then we actually, since our quality was good, customers were happy, we started utilizing a lot of back-end offers. We started pushing some bundles as well. So then at least, you know, we were making profit on the back end. So it was already worth it just by doing that. But then we also had this idea to, you know, take that product that was already good quality, but place it in like the premium or even luxury segment. I mean, so to give you an idea, when we started selling the product as a dropshipping product, it cost $30. Then when we first got our inventory, it was $50. And now the premium / luxury version that we have is $100. So what we did is we took the product, we found an even better supplier, and then we placed that product into the premium luxury segment, had it made again in amazing quality, and obviously our margin went up like crazy because the production actually wasn't that much more expensive. Like at first, you know, we were paying like $7 for the production. Our cost of goods was like $7. And then with the premium version, it went up to 12. So, I mean, 12 and then the selling price of 100, the margin is crazy, obviously. And essentially, then we discovered that going for that premium market is really, you know, what we should do, because actually what happened, because also the packaging again looked much more premium, we made the packaging even nicer. So then our ads for the premium product were actually converting just as well as the ones for the standard one. So then what we really realized is that we should focus on selling, on mainly promoting that premium product. Like actually that's what we're running the ads for. But then we still have the more affordable version on our website, because some people probably, you know, $100 is maybe a bit too expensive for them. So they still affordable product. And we're still selling like 500 to 1,000 units per month of the affordable one. And we're not even running ads. So that's either organic traffic, or just people who are looking at the premium, think it's too expensive, and then go and buy the more affordable one. But what I'm trying to say with this is, you know, you always have solutions. Like even if you buy the inventory and maybe your ads on Facebook aren't profitable anymore, then you can go and try Pinterest ads, or, you know, you can go and try selling a different product and then bundling it with the product that you had initially. There is always some solution to that.
That's awesome. And so oftentimes if people see like two products, like one is 30, one is 100, right? Like for me, subconsciously, the first thing is like, this product for 30, probably they had to cut some corners, right? To make it, you know, like, so it's like subconsciously, the more expensive it is, like we perceive it as to be like a higher quality. And sometimes it is the case, sometimes it isn't, you know, it's like there are different cases for this, but in terms of psychology, what kind of like got you to do that? What motivated you to do that? Just like the fact that you haven't been like very profitable, you just did it out of desperation or something else?
To go into like the premium segment, you mean? Uh-huh. So mainly because, of course, obviously the first reason, because the affordable version just wasn't profitable. So we were thinking of ideas how we can increase our average order value, how we can increase our margins. And that just kind of what came, you know, naturally, either bundling or making a more premium version. And then on the flip side, we also wanted to like with our brand now, like it's the product, we can really stand behind our products. You know, the quality is actually like great. People are really happy with it. And, you know, when we had the initial branded product, the quality was already, like I mentioned, so much better than the dropshipping like version of that, but it still wasn't like perfect. And so we really wanted to make a product where the quality is awesome, where the quality is perfect, where we can like 100% stand behind it and can say that, you know, pretty much every customer who's going to receive it and who's going to look at it is going to love it, you know. And that was kind of the second motivation. Yeah, man. Mm-hmm.
Cool. So you've done this. So initially you've done the product, the packaging upgrade, right? So transitioning mm-hmm. from that like drop shipping model to branded model. So mm-hmm. you've done the packaging, then the product quality, right? Mm-hmm. What about shipping? Like, how did that change? Like, did that change in any ways, or how long it takes for people to get their product? Like,
Also, great question, man. So in the beginning, when we were shipping from China, obviously we were getting like the typical like 1 to 3 weeks, depending on the season. Of course, Q4 usually takes a bit longer. So sometimes even like 4 or 5 weeks, basic drop shipping times. And then when we started shipping from Bali, we actually reached out to DHL. And we had a guy who was working with them. He also has like a brand. He's based in Bali, and so he introduced us to them. And then we like really negotiated a deal with DHL. I think we actually have one of like the most insane deals that anyone has ever gotten from them. And we're literally getting 10 shipping between 2 and 6 days worldwide for $10 from Bali. So we're shipping from Bali to mainly our US customers in 2 to 6 days. Mm-hmm.
Is your product light, like small in size?
It's small. Yeah, it's definitely small. Otherwise, that wouldn't be possible.
Mm-hmm. Wow, this is crazy.
Yeah, man. So
are you planning at some point to like just like import bulk of your products to the United States if that's where most of your sales come from? Or are you just like stick with this model like... Milk
absolutely it. Man, absolutely. Like, we're actually currently working on that. We're currently in touch with a few fulfillment centers in the US. So for this year, mm-hmm. we especially then going into Q4, we want to make sure that we like ship our products in bulk to a US fulfillment center, have it shipped from there. Of course, we're going to get even faster shipping times doing that, probably cut some costs as well. And mm-hmm. yeah, so that's definitely the next step for us. But currently, the way we did it from Bali has also worked really well mm-hmm. for us.
Okay, so what made you like, because I think everyone's looking at like China as kind of like, this is it, right? This is where the manufacturer needs to be, right? Like, now you have the manufacturing in Bali, right? Like, what made you looking into like Bali in the first place, like as a manufacturing hub?
So I simply started asking around between like some of my friends if they like know any, you know, factories, any makers that could potentially manufacture the product that we are selling. And actually one of my good friends back then, he's my business partner now, he had connections to a production plant in Bali that makes our product. Uh-huh. And yeah, that was honestly kind of a no-brainer going there. Like, seeing they have better quality for almost the same price, that was, was a no-brainer to simply do it. But I think if you really want to, like, go away from China, it's a lot more difficult, you know? Like, it's not as easy as just, like, with China, you can literally just go on Alibaba, order, like, 10,000 units, ship it to a US fulfillment center, and you're done, you know, super easy. Whereas with other countries, like, it definitely, you know, you have to pick up the phone, you have to call the manufacturers, you have to ask around. Like, sometimes you call one manufacturer and then they tell you, yeah, we can't make it, but we know someone who maybe could, and then you go and call them again. So it is a lot more work, but it can be worth it.
What kind of like products? So specifically for Bali, let's say if someone is like, you know, maybe we have someone who's watching and also like, you know, might be potential interest. Like, what kind of like products Bali have you seen that they can manufacture and then manufacture well? What kind of like categories of products?
What Bali is really big at is stuff like accessories and jewelry. That's mm-hmm. huge in Bali. Actually, Bali is one of the biggest silver makers in the world.
Oh, really?
So that's huge there. Then what's also huge in Bali is like furniture and interior design stuff. So not like your typical, you know, when it comes to like plastic, I think China is still like the cheapest option.
Yeah.
But again, when it comes to anything that has like, that's like related to, for example, also watches, if you know you're selling watches, that's great in Bali. If you have any sort of accessories, also clothing is great in Bali. That works really well there too. And again, anything from like furniture over like simple home design accessories and that kind of stuff, you will also find a lot of manufacturers there.
I know some of the biggest, like probably some of the biggest like POD and like apparel guys also like in Vietnam, right?
So mm-hmm. Yes, true. Mm-hmm.
So which is also like, you know, for me, like, it's like, wow, it's like you can do this stuff in Vietnam.
Thailand is also huge for like clothing.
That's interesting. That's interesting because I buy some of the, you know, kind of like how it's all, I buy, for example, some clothes here, you know, they could be like made, you buy like a pair of like pants or like the t-shirt, and it could be made in like Romania, right? Or Bulgaria or like in Thailand, right? Like, you know, so I think it's like worse, like if you have something that's working, probably it's worse like kind of like investigating what other options you have for like manufacturing, right?
100%, man. Definitely. And also, I have to say, like, sometimes if you really put in the work, you can definitely get better prices than in China. Like, China nowadays is definitely not the cheapest option anymore. Like, it's sort of the easiest. Mm-hmm. And also, like, the best for certain products. But mm-hmm. for other products, it's definitely worth it to look into other countries as well, 100%. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. What percentage of your revenue get from email in the back end?
We have a pretty big percentage from email. Actually, at the moment, we are in like a, what we call like a refresh period. So at the moment, like our team is really focused on designing new products and coming out with new products to complement mm-hmm. our brand. Then also, we just got into wholesale. So we have a few like little boutiques in the US that we, you know, sell our products to in wholesale, and then they sell them in their stores, nice. Which is also awesome. So we're working on a lot of those kind of things at the moment. So we're not running that many ads in Q4, you know, when like our product is at its peak and when we're running a ton of ads, our email made up around 22% of our revenue. So pretty big, actually, right now that we're barely running any ads, it's almost 50%. So,
oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. So at the moment, we're getting a lot of our revenue from email. And that's also the beauty of having a brand, because obviously, you know, if people are really happy with the experience, they're going to want to come back. And we also have this this company mission where we, since, you know, we're based in Bali, obviously, like most people only really know the touristy side of Bali, yeah. Like the, you know, nice beaches and parties and that kind of stuff, nice cafes. But many people also don't know that the north of Bali, where like you'll almost never see a tourist, is actually extremely poor. It's like really, really poor. Like literally people there make like $600 a year, and that's their income. So what we're actually doing is we are supporting a few girls from the north side of Bali, and we are sponsoring their education. You know, we're paying for their schooling, we're paying for books for them. Then we have actually someone dedicated on our team who's our mission manager, and she like organizes free English classes for the girls. And actually recently we also had a trip with them where they, and you have to imagine, you know, they come from the north side of Bali. They've never seen the tourist side before. They've never been to the south.
Oh, really?
And so like pretty much all their like perspectives are either working on their parents' farm for like $600 a year, or, you know, if they get a good job, then they work at like a grocery store or something, and then that's it. And so we brought them out to the south side of Bali, and you know, we made a deal with the hotel that they can, you know, like look at everything there. They will show them around. It was like a really nice hotel. And then in the end, they also offered them that if they, you know, want to work in their holidays, want to make some extra money, they can always come there and do that. They can do an internship there, or even, you know, start when they finish school, actually start working there if they want to. So we're like creating a lot of opportunities. And on one side, of course, you know, that's like, we absolutely enjoy doing that. We like, it's one of the coolest things to, you know, be supporting a good cause. And on the other side, it's obviously also great for our marketing as well, because now we can, you know, in our email newsletters, we can update our customers about that. And we can really show them that, hey, you know, we're not just like saying that we're doing something or even just donating the money, but we're like actively doing something good with the money that we get from you. And for that reason, there's so many people who like love our brand and who are coming back to us. We also recently started a subscription service kind of based on that idea. And The idea is that, you know, you get a free product every quarter if you're in the subscription, and then a portion of that also goes to our mission. And then you actually even get to, you know, make certain decisions that are going to happen in our mission. For example, what classes, you know, you're going to sponsor for the girls and that kind of thing. So
this is awesome, man. This is awesome. I mean, that's on top of all of the impact that you're making for the community just by manufacturing your stuff there, right? Like,
yeah.
Exactly. Because you know you're providing jobs to the factory, right? Like those people feed their families, right? Then the owner of the factory, he can buy like more inventory. Mm-hmm. He feeds, you know, those families. So it's definitely amazing impact that you're making there. So that's awesome.
Thank you.
So you have a more affordable version, then you have more premium version, right? So do you have do you constantly launch new products? Or you just like stick to those products and you just want to kind of like expand and keep it as simple as possible with as little SKUs as possible?
We're doing a little bit of both, to be honest. Like on one side, I like keeping things simple. Like I don't want to launch like a new product every month and just for the sake of launching a product. But mm-hmm. we are doing a lot of research. Like we have our dedicated researcher on the team who's always like looking for new ideas. And now we, at this point, we have, I think three complementary products to mm-hmm. our main product that's, again, available in like the different price categories. And so we've launched these three complementary products that are also doing pretty well. And we're also definitely planning to launch more in the future. But, you know, we're not just launching a product for the sake of adding more products. Like we still like to keep it simple, but obviously expand our brand in our niche as much as we can.
How do you like, so you mentioned with your brand, bulk of the sales come from like Q4, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So during like regular months, like are you still profitable or like you just like kind of like how the math works out?
Not always, to be honest. Like on the front end, we're not always profitable throughout the year. Even like last year in the summer, we had a few months that weren't profitable. We were just breaking even. But again, then even if we're just breaking even, it's okay because we are making money on the back end through our emails and now also our subscription and that kind of stuff. So we do definitely have those months. But even if we do have them, that's totally okay because we know Q4 is going to make up for it. And that's also why, for example, now I'm getting into wholesale as well so that we don't just have our online store as a sales channel, but we also have a few others where we can always profit from also throughout the year.
Cool. Do you want to do like any German like market, like any markets in Europe?
We're planning that actually. We're planning to expand to other markets soon as well. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely going to come. We honestly just really haven't gotten to it up until now. Also, the shipping restrictions in Germany are a bit stricter, or in Europe in general, with like customs. Items over like a certain amount can get like held up by customs, and then like it can be a pain. I mean, you can make it work, and with my dropshipping stores, I also make it work. But when you're running a brand, you know, like you want to have a good customer experience, and you don't want customers receiving letters from customs that their order is being held up. So what we actually want to make sure is before we expand to Germany is to like get a dedicated fulfillment center in Germany as well, and then ship straight from Germany.
So you mentioned you're running at the same time currently the dropshipping and the brand, right?
Mm-hmm.
How is overall kind of like experience running both of these things at the same time? How is it different, you know, one from another, and like, you know, what do you enjoy more? Like how does it?
Good question, man. Just to clarify, it's like I'm not still dropshipping the same product. Like for that product, obviously we have the brand. Like there's no point of also dropshipping it. But I do have a few other stores where I'm dropshipping other products. And I have to say, if you ask me what I like more, obviously, I mean, it's definitely the brand, you know, like it's really cool to build something for the long term, to build something also with the plan of exiting it for a lot of money in the future. And it's also great to see our progress and our general story also with our mission, you know, kind of seeing the progress of the kids that we're helping there. And like when it comes to fun, the brand is much cooler. It's definitely much cooler. But dropshipping also has its advantages. Like dropshipping is still way more low risk. And with dropshipping, you can actually, I have to say, you can make more money in also a shorter period of time. For example, what happened to us in last Q4, we didn't have enough inventory. So what do you do if you're a brand? You know, you have to keep your ads low. Like, I mean, like I would have loved to keep scaling the ads, but if you don't have enough inventory, you can't. Whereas if you're a dropshipper, you can pretty much scale as much as you want, as long as, you know, your agent can find enough suppliers to buy your product from. Mm-hmm. So yeah, man, I think that's an advantage of dropshipping. And again, also, of course, the barrier of entry is much, much, much lower. But on the flip side, I think for some products, I'm also not planning on turning them into a brand. I'm planning on just dropshipping them because I don't really see a vision with them. I don't really see like a long-term vision for those products. But for every dropshipping product where I see that long-term vision, I'm definitely planning on turning those into brands as well in the future.
What would be your piece of advice? Like, let's say someone's like dropshipping, doing like $20, $30, $50, $100,000 per month, and like maybe thinking about the brand, but then like hesitating because like thinking, you know, it's a lot of like inventory or some more risks. Like, what would you say to those people?
I would say if you can see a long-term vision, if it's not just like a trend product, like a fidget spinner or something, you know, if it's really like a, if it's really like an evergreen product, 100% go for it. Like, you should definitely go for it because it's just so much more sustainable in the long term. Like, you're building an actual asset, you know, like with dropshipping, you can have big cash flows, you can make good money in a quick period of time, but you're not building an asset, right? You're not really building anything that you can exit. Whereas with a brand, you absolutely are. And with a brand, essentially, you also have something at some point we're like really proud of, and where you're like, you know, like you just really love your own actual brand. So I think for everyone who is dropshipping an evergreen product successfully, they should absolutely consider turning it into a brand.
And what were like your major mistakes, you know, that you think like now looking back, like, oh, fuck, I shouldn't have done that? Or like, what were the major mistakes that you think other people can learn from?
When it comes to the brand itself, inventory management, like I really wasn't, or nobody on our team really was used to managing inventory. And I was dropshipping before, so I never had to worry about it. So make sure you properly manage your inventory right from the beginning. It's difficult, but it's really necessary. It's just one of the things that comes with having a brand. But again, it's super worth it in the end. And also when it comes to transitioning, honestly, what would be one other big thing? Honestly, also to really take risks, you know, you have to be willing to take risks when it comes to it. Like, obviously it's scary to maybe take all the profits from your dropshipping and invest them into private labeling the product. But if you build the framework in advance, and with the framework, I mean, you know, having a team and having multiple traffic sources is also a really good thing to have in advance. You know, if you're just relying on Facebook, it can be tough. Like, it can happen that your ads aren't profitable and you like have your inventory. But if you know you have profitable Facebook ads, you have Pinterest ads, you have Google ads as well, and you have all these sources, then like you can be sure that you will sell your inventory from some of them. So make sure that from the beginning on, once you get Facebook up and running, once you have Facebook scaled, make sure to build a team or at least just get a media buyer who manages the Facebook ads for you, and then focus more of your time onto, you know, other traffic sources and just expanding in general before then really going all in and purchasing your first inventory.
That's awesome. So how you structure your team, like what kind of like positions you currently have, and how do you hire people?
Mm-hmm. Like, so for our team, we currently have for the brand, I mean, I have two separate teams. One of my teams is a dropshipping team. You know, they only focus on our dropshipping stores. We have like two media buyers, a product researcher, and a store manager there. Mm-hmm. And then for our brand, we have one dedicated media buyer. Then we have a website developer. Then we have two people for packing and shipping, two for customer support. And then we have one more for the mission, our mission manager. And then we have someone for research. And the way we structure it is that the media buyer is pretty much who's like managing the researcher and the developer. And also one of her customer support agents is like just doing like social media posting. So she's just like posting a bit on Instagram. It's also managing that. And then my business partner, he's like focusing more on the operational position. So he's managing the customer support agents. He's managing, which are pretty much self-sustained at this point. You know, like they know what to do. They know how to work. He also manages the head of our packing and shipping. And then she has like one assistant under her who helps her with just like pre-packaging orders and that kind of stuff.
And did you hire everyone in Bali?
Yes, all of them are locally in Bali. So we have everyone at our office, at our headquarters. And now some of them are also working from home, which has been working pretty well, but we try to keep our team locally there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so do they speak like good English?
Most of them, yes. Most of them, definitely. I mean, it was a bit hard to find people with good English were pretty hard to find. But we managed to really secure a great team for ourselves. And I'm super happy with everyone on there. Everyone has done amazing work over the last year. Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely looking into the future with them. I think they're a great team to grow with.
That's awesome and cool. Thank you for joining me today. It was a lot of great insights. And for those of you guys who want to transition into like from dropshipping to brand, I think you can watch it, you can rewatch it, because I think a lot of insights, very simple things, right? But still like, you know, like people like, I think are afraid to take that kind of like leap or like make those like adjustments, even like the packaging, you know, maybe sourcing the product from a different source, getting like a better quality, making those like little adjustments that can make like a big difference for the long term. So thank you so much for sharing that, Michael. And guys, thank you for watching. Michael, thank you for joining me today. Next time we connect when you guys are ready to exit. Or after you exit.
Awesome, man. Let's do it. I'm stoked for that. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, thank you. And I'll have also Michael information in case you want to connect with him. Feel free to connect. And thank you, man. Thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thanks, man. Great talking to you.
Hey, thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're looking for help in scaling your e-commerce business or dropshipping business, then just go to ecommercescalingsecrets.com, ecommercescalingsecrets.com, and fill up the form, and we'll see exactly how we can help you to take your business to the next level. Thank you.